Hi, and welcome to the Kubernetes podcast from Google. I'm Adam Glick.
And I'm Craig Box.
So you're back home from KubeCon, Craig?
Yes, we spent another couple of days after the event traipsing around Barcelona and its surrounding areas, mostly in art museums. Went to Gaudi's Casa Batlló, which is a regular house that a madman redesigned and took out all the straight lines and poured curves into everything he could find. We went to the Picasso Museum, where we had a regular artist who just had an epiphany and decided he'd start drawing strange cubist things. And then up to Figueres, where you see the Dali Museum, where I'm not sure Dali ever was a regular artist. He definitely had something going on in his head.
Is there such a thing as a regular artist? We have one of those buildings where they talk about having no right angles in Seattle. It used to be called the EMP, and they've updated it since then.
It is the Museum of Popular Culture, MoPop.
MoPop, yes.
A lot of exhibits there that actually do trigger the things that I very much love. So one time there was both David Bowie and the Muppets, and I managed to buy myself a t-shirt wearing both of those themes at the same time.
Gosh, I hope it's Kermit the Frog with the famous lightning bolt across
his
face.
No, it was Beaker, but you got the theme, basically. But anyway, they just don't seem to make artists like they used to. I was thinking afterwards, like, Picasso and Dali are household names, both Spanish, obviously. And then there was sort of Andy Warhol and a bunch of artists, which I would say never quite made it to top-tier prominence. And sort of aside from Banksy today, I'm trying to think of anyone who would have that level of infamy 100 years from now.
I'm wondering if the Warhol estate might take umbrage with the not making it to prominence statement, but perhaps it's just shifted to different types of art. I would think of movies, music. Lots of household names there.
Oh, absolutely. It's just, I wasn't sure if it was since the rise of popular music nowadays. It's all Kanye West all the time. Thank you so much to everyone who came up and said hello at KubeCon. Thank you especially to those who came to our lounge meetup and shared a little Canadian liquor with us. There's a fun story there. We have a listener, Francois from Quebec, came up to me after Google Cloud Next a couple of months ago and said, I love the show. Thank you so much. Here's a bottle of this fine Canadian liqueur. It's a thing called Sortilège. It is Quebecois, as is he, and it's basically half maple syrup, half whiskey, or as best as I could tell, alcoholic honey. And I said, thank you. That's a wonderful gift. Thank you so much. And Adam obviously can't make it for Glick 2.0 reasons, as we've explained on the show. But next time I see him, I will make sure to drink to the health of his child and also share it with our community. And that is indeed what we did.
Yes, it was lovely. And hopefully we can link a picture of some of the folks who were there to share with us. Special shout out to some of our friends who were able to run into at KubeCon. Wilbert from South Africa, Laura from Ireland, Stefan from France, Alex and Lynn from Zurich. And thank you to everyone who grabbed a sticker and who was able to tweet out a picture at us. Sorry for some of you who we weren't able to meet up with there at the show. Hopefully we'll have a chance to meet up with you at a future show.
Let's get to the news. Microsoft, along with mesh vendors Solo.io, Buoyant, and HashiCorp, announced the Service Mesh Interface, a spec which is designed to provide a standard interface for service meshes on Kubernetes. The spec, released under the Deus Labs brand, works similarly to Ingress in Kubernetes, offering a subset of features specific to the Kubernetes implementation of Service Mesh, but not implementing them. There are adapters for Istio, as well as for Linkerd and Consul. We're glad to see more people interested in the Service Mesh space, and you'll hear more about SMI in today's interview.
More news from Microsoft at KubeCon last week. The Cloud Native Application Bundle team announced Pivotal had joined forces to work on the spec, and the project is approaching a release candidate. We'll talk to the CNAB team on an upcoming show. Also, the Virtual Kubelet project announced version 1.0, with performance improvements to signal its readiness for production workloads.
Banzai Cloud have released an operator for Kafka. The astute listener will know that there are three such operators in the ecosystem already, including one from Kafka-sponsored Confluent. All are based on stateful sets, which mean you can only ever remove the last broker that you added when you scaled down. Banzai's solution is pod-based, a Kafka set, if you will, where you can remove arbitrary brokers, unlocking more fine-grained control. Along with this, they have released a Go library to help compare if two Kubernetes objects are the same, ignoring fields which are amended by the server after being submitted.
Last week, IBM announced a new open-source project called Razzie, not to be confused with the similarly named Motion Picture Awards. Razzie follows the trend of multi-cluster continuous delivery tools for Kubernetes that are becoming quite popular as organizations take on more automation and DevOps operations. RASi focuses on templating deployments across environments and clouds and helps you gain insight into what applications and versions you are running on them.
Couchbase announced version 1.2 of their autonomous Kubernetes operator, adding new features while insisting you keep your eyes on the road. The new release supports automated rolling updates, an admission controller for validating configuration, and production support on the three big clouds.
Rancher have announced Rio, a Kubernetes-based micro-PaaS described as making containers fun. Rio installs on your Kubernetes cluster and brings with it Istio and Knative, as well as adding features like Let's Encrypt, simplifying the configuration and deployment of container applications. No word yet if Duran Duran are making any contributions to the project.
Want to run Atlassian software stack on Kubernetes? Pragma, with a Q, are a Scandinavian company specializing in continuous delivery. They have open-sourced their Atlassian Software in Kubernetes solution, abbreviated ASK, or ASK. ASK is actually a set of scripts to help put Jira, Confluence, and Bitbucket into containers, but ASD wasn't as catchy an acronym.
SAP have announced that their open-source application framework called Kima, spelled K-Y-M-A, has reached 1.0. It contains three main components, an application connector, which allows you to iterate on a component without having to release a full product update, somewhat like an API gateway in front of it, a serverless component that has you write node functions called lambdas for running functions, and a service management part, which provides a UI for service discovery.
Congratulations to Intuit, who won the CNCF's End User Award at KubeCon last week. The CNCF called out Intuit's involvement in the community, as well as its use of many cloud-native technologies, including Kubernetes, Istio, Prometheus, Fluentd, Jaeger, and Open Policy Agent, as factors in their winning. Their prize? A free blog post.
Last week, Brian Lyles said his old company, Capital One, were all in on Kubernetes and are having lots of success so far. They appear to be doubling down on that by opening up their Kubernetes platform called Critical Stack to external developers and its eventual offering as an enterprise package. Capital One made the announcement last week at the Collision 2019 conference, which is as close to the word crash as I ever want my bank to get. This announcement follows their acquisition of the startup named Critical Stack in 2016 and its beta release in 2017.
And that's the news.
Edit Levine is the founder and CEO of Solo.io. Previous to Solo.io, she was the CTO of the cloud management division at EMC. Welcome to the show, Edit.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Your company was founded in 2017, so it wasn't named after the Star Wars movie. What is the story behind the name?
Yeah, that's actually funny. So I was looking for names, and on the same time, I was looking to actually raise money. And what happened is that when I tried to raise money, specifically because I'm from Boston, I tried to do it on the East Coast.
You can tell you're from Boston, by the way. You said Boston.
Boston.
I was like, that's impressive. You have the Israeli and Boston accent merged, right?
Yeah, it's ridiculous, right? Probably not. Yeah, it's bad. But yes, so I tried to raise money there. That's almost impossible. First of all, there's not a lot of VC there. And second of all, even if you have them, you know, they really kind of like conservative. They need a partners and so on. So then I went to the West Coast. I get money with no problem. But Skunk was to despise those people. I call it solo, which is kind of like, and I like it. And yeah.
So you are the sole founder of the company? That's the story?
Yeah. They were really wanted me to take a partner. And I kind of like said, why? I just need to build a product. It doesn't make any sense at all. That's one thing. And the second reason is that I'm a real geek. So it's solo.io. And if you're taking the S from it, it looks like 01010. So I really like that. Yeah.
Binary association. I love it.
Exactly.
What was the first product for solo.io?
So when we actually start, the biggest problem that we saw in the market is that, you know, I come from a lot of startup company that got acquired. I was in Dynamic Hub, got acquired by VMware. So we did like vRealize or cloud when cloud wasn't cloud. It was called virtualization back then. And then I moved to another startup company, got acquired by Verizon. And even when I was in EMC, I was doing advanced development. So wherever I was, it was very innovative. And I put a lot of open source out there. And what I noticed is that when I'm putting an open source out there, in the end of the day, there's not a lot of people really understanding it because they can't really adopt that because there is a huge gap because where they are actually in their process, like those enterprise, to where actually the people are, you know, in the process of innovation. And basically in solo, that was my purpose. My purpose was to kind of like close the gap, bring those people with me that we can innovate together. So basically, when we started, we saw kind of like, you know, like every company is trying to do a digital transformation kind of like journey. The first thing that they will try to do is to migrate from monolithic to microservices. So our first product was exactly this. It was Glue. And its purpose was, in my opinion, the best API that exists out there natively on Kubernetes with a first citizen to kind of like gluing monolithic microservices and serverless together natively, you know, using CRDs and very, very innovative. And the idea was to help those companies migrate to microservices. Now, once they actually migrate to microservices, then they have all set of new problems, right? So how those microservices going to communicate between each other? How they're going to safely doing it? And how do you actually see what's going on? So service mesh solving this problem, right? SDN, you know, LinkedIn and console. But the thing is that I didn't think that it's smart for me to kind of like try and actually just, you know, work on service mesh. What I did is I tried to understand what would be the problem after it. And what I realized is that the problem that coming with service mesh is that there is so many, right? And you probably will have more than one instance, maybe from the same type, but you will have more than one cluster. Therefore, you will need more than one instance, maybe two SDO. Maybe you will want to use on AWS and then you will need to go to the cloud. So you need somehow to manage this. And this is a very simple orchestration problem. So basically what we build a product called Superglue, that it's basically a service mesh interface for all the configuration between all those meshes. And then it's also discover them, installing them, and also group them together to one big mesh. So then what you can do is basically, you know, take App Mesh and take SDO, flatten everything through them, and basically just have an ability to manage them the same way. So that's the second project called Superglue.
Let's start by digging into Glue. Glue is an API gateway based on Envoy.
Right.
What was the ecosystem like when you were making the choice of which engine to use for Glue?
So it was really, really simple. There's something I'm pretty good at is to understand the trend. Mm-hmm. By Google actually adopting Envoy, it was clear that this is going to be something big. Lyft, Google, big names. I knew that Google putting a lot of resources behind that. So I knew that that would be go the fastest. Now, I also like Envoy because three reasons. First of all, it's really, really extensible. And for us, it's critical because we need to differentiate ourselves. So we needed to be able to actually write filters and extend that. The performance is great. And then besides that, the ecosystem is amazing. So I knew that it would go very fast. So that was like no brainer for me. This is what we're building on.
You mentioned before Superglue.
Yeah.
And kind of the next phase of that. How did you kind of decide to build that? And what is in Superglue that takes Glue to the next logical step?
So as I said before, what we wanted to do is just take service mesh and kind of like build on top of it. But we realized that it's not ready. And we also recognized, it's actually what happened in the KubeCon like a year and a half ago. I recognized that it will be harder for customers to adopt it. It's really inventive kind of like solution, right? You need a sidecar next to it, microservices, you need to redeploy all of them and so on. So that's kind of like, I felt that it would be much easier for me to go to customer and say, look, you have this problem to migrate, and here's an API gateway that you're already familiar with. API is a concept that people are running forever, and it's pretty simple. So basically, when I went back to the team, I said, how can I build this thing on the API layer, on the API management, but still going to give them the benefit to actually migrate? And that's exactly what we did. That's what Glue is. But, you know, once I saw after it that SDO started to mature, there was other like Console Connect that we actually helped build. So like the first implementation for Envoy in Console Connect was actually us because we knew Envoy very well. So they needed help. We're working with Linkerd. We're working with all of them. And we basically recognized that there's quite a lot of problem in, still to solve in this ecosystem. And it makes a lot of sense that you might need different solution. Like for instance, if you're running on AWS, you should use App Mesh. And the reason is because it's natively working there. It's free and it's integrated with everything that they have. But you know, it's not open source. So when you're running on-prem, you have to use something else, right? So this ability of kind of like give the customer the ability to choose, I think that was kind of like the first thing. And that's what our customers are excited about right now because they don't know which to choose and to take kind of like said, it doesn't really matter what you choose. If you feel right now better with Linkerd and then you want to swap, just swap it. But we have an API that you don't need to change anything on the configuration or everything you build on top of it. So that's kind of like where it started. But then we also wanted to solve the problem of how easy is, and this is what Superglue is doing, how easy is to use SDO, for instance. You know, it's pretty complicated. You need to create four different objects for it, right, for instance. So we kind of like make it way more, if you want to see, it's kind of like the OpenShift of Kubernetes, right? It's just easier for the user. And then the last thing we also recognize that because you will need to use more stuff, we wanted to group them together. The meshes. So for instance, I have in production one cluster here and there, want to group them together and basically, you know, use the same Prometheus. So use the same root certificate. Yeah. And the last thing that I would say is that the only reason we actually wanted to do that is because we are interested on building on top of the mesh. And for that, we needed an API. I don't want to create four different implementations for every application that I'm creating. And I wanted to kind of like to have this abstraction layer that I will be able to choose.
Do you think regardless of which one it is, do you think service meshes are inevitable?
Yes, definitely. I mean, I think that, as I said, like that's the best choice, in my opinion, to solve the problem that the microservices ecosystem is, you know, will need to deal with when they're moving from microservices distributed application. It's hard. Mm-hmm. And that's probably, in my opinion, there is a trade-off of performance, but I mean, I think it's so little that it's bringing a lot of benefit.
If I have 400 nodes that I need to run, I have to make decisions about which zones I run them in and whether I run multiple clusters and whether I run in multiple regions or on multiple clouds and so on. You make decisions in large part based on how you want to pack workloads together and redundancy requirements.
Right.
Is the decision tree the same with service meshes? Should I be saying I want a single service mesh across all of these environments, or might you want different meshes in different environments?
Yeah. So, I mean, today everybody in the community are agreed that basically per cluster, you need to have one instance of mesh, but this is exactly why we think that Superglue and the hub, the orchestration make a lot of sense, because you will have more than one for sure. And you will have more than one for different reason. You know, maybe those guys are production, this one is staging and it's a development. It's looking different. It's different configuration. They're talking to the different metric system. So you need the ability to actually group them together. And I feel that that's probably, you know, multi-cluster is the big problem that everybody talking about it. And we're basically riding exactly on it. So yeah, I believe that that would be in a zone kind of like on the multi-cluster work that is being done.
Is this technology something that you plan to provide as open source into Istio, or is it something that will live separately that people will choose to plug in?
So in the last KubeCon, we just announced together with Microsoft something called SMI. SMI is basically the API of Superglue, right? Only the configuration, only the actual translation. And the reason we actually partnered with Microsoft and Ashikop and Boyan on this is because we felt that it shouldn't be ours. It's not ours. It's a community story, right? First of all, you know, we're working a lot with service mesh for the last year and a half, but are we sure that we have the best API for that? No. We should ask customer and user what they want. So what we thought that it's bigger than us, and we wanted to give this at least the spec to the community and hopefully to the CNCF, and basically let the community decide what this right API should be like. And as I said, Superglue is more than this, and it's open source as well. So in the end of the day, it's all open source. Everybody can use it, but it's doing the grouping, it's doing the discovery, it's doing the installation that is not done in the SMI. Service mesh interface, yeah.
You mentioned the announcement that was made at KubeCon about SMI, which is the service mesh interface.
Right.
So it's like a programming interface. It basically defines how that things can talk to each other, but doesn't choose which particular mesh would sit underneath it. Which meshes do you support with SMI? Like, what were you thinking about when you built that?
We are about to support all of them, but there is a difference between the SMI, the service mesh interface, to Superglue, because we just didn't have enough time to move all the code to SMI. Mm-hmm. So SMI itself, I think there is an SDO adapter, there is some telemetry that Linkerd did, and there is console policy. But we actually way ahead, right, in Superglue, because we're working it for a year. So we're supporting SDO, of course, AppMesh, Console Connect, Linkerd, and we're supporting all the options that they have. So we're way more mature, yeah. But we will move it, so will take that.
Having taken that API and built the service mesh interface, where do you want to see that go?
As I said, what I believe that it's very interesting, as I said, there is use case for customer today. They want to try. So, I mean, this is what we saw from our customer. We came to people in the beginning when service mesh started. We said, guys, tell us, what are you doing with service mesh? And what we discover is that they're spending a lot of resources to actually investigate. So they're starting with Istio, and maybe it's too complicated. So they're moving to Linkerd, but guess what? It's not supporting Envoy. So is that going to really win? So they're going to console, but console only supports layer 4. So it's a problem, right? And then, you know, an AppMesh, but it's not open source. So the question is, which one you choose, you learn 4 different API. And is it really necessary? I mean, if you think about it, most of the people that will use service mesh, we use a very special use case that are very, you know, 80% of them probably will use only a few API, and that's it. Do I need 50, whatever, 60 API that Istio has? Probably not, right?
Gabe Monroy from Microsoft described it to me as ingress for Istio. The ingress object is in Kubernetes. One of the challenges of the ingress object in Kubernetes is that it has described a minimal set of behaviors, and for every vendor's different implementation, they've had to implement annotations to describe that.
Right.
How is SMI going to solve that problem?
So that's a good question. Every time we're trying to abstract something and come with a, you know, little command there, you will have this problem. So the way we fix it in Superglue, and it's not in SMI yet, the way we're fixing it is that we're basically creating a system that if you want the basic functionality, that's not a problem. You can use whatever, SMI. But if you want something that is a little bit more specific or more special, you will be able to actually go directly, for instance, to STL. Do it there, and then we're not going to overwrite it. We're kind of like going to merge that together. So this is special CRDs in STL that we are not touching. And if you guys want to still put it there, we're going to merge it and serve it to STL. So in the end of the day, we're letting you the ability to have all the spec, if it makes sense. But I would argue that probably 80 to 90% of the time, it just would be good enough. And actually, I mean, Tim Hopkins is a good friend. And I don't think that it's a good definition to kind of like compare it to the ingress, because I don't think that I think Tim and everybody think that the ingress of Kubernetes wasn't doing a good job. And actually,
yeah, we spoke to him on the show about that. And he sort of said, well, there needs to be a version 2 of that. And so do you think that there are lessons from the SMI that will help influence version 2 of the Kubernetes ingress?
You know, we came with something very basic based off, you know, we were working a lot with the service mesh. I feel that we need input for the community. So, you know, it's just the beginning. It's very, very new. It's very, very fresh. But I feel that the community will have a lot of influence of how those API will look, and it should, right?
Can I build a mesh of meshes if what underlies all of those is different? Do we end up with a lowest common denominator there, or is there a way to actually take the benefits and extend that?
Okay, so one of the things that we can do is basically group meshes, right? I mean, in the end of the day, what is common between those meshes is usually Envoy. It's almost always the common, almost. You know, let's put Linkerd 1 second aside. So theoretically, I can take two meshes, right? And just flatten networking through them and treat them like one big, right? And theoretically, I don't even care which type of mesh is it, if it's STL or Ashiko, for instance, because it's using Envoy, so I can do the flat networking, and then I can use the SMI as the API to kind of like translate. So to me, it's one big mesh, right? It's like the Mesos vision kind of thing, right? You have a lot of computer, let's treat them as one big. Mm-hmm. And then let's put stuff on top of it. And that's exactly what I'm passionate about in the SMI, the stuff that we can build on top of it.
Is there a way to avoid ending up with a lowest common denominator where each of the meshes has their own particular unique features that they provide, but once you bring them together and if you have a standardized interface, is there a way to actually leverage the benefits that you get for the different meshes that you may have connected? Or does it kind of become you have to extend the SMI and those pieces need to grow within SMI in order for those features to benefit across all the different meshes?
Okay, so we're working a lot with all those meshes. And what we notice is that, for instance, a retry is a good example of a big problem to kind of like merge together, because the definition of retry in STL is totally different than the Linkerd one, right? It's like just not the same. So now if you're coming and calling it a function, how do you do this, right? It's not doing the same thing. It's not even the same meaning, but they call it the same name, right? So that was kind of like challenging. We overcome it, I think. But that's the problem. I think that STL is way the most mature one. Then they're going the fastest, which means that if you're going to go and try to do any function in, you know, any command in the SMI, any API, you will discover that most of them will say no, implemented, because just, you know, really, they just didn't implement it yet. So we can't do fault injection for Linkerd or for Console Connect. And we build a product on top of it called GlueShot, which is a chaos engineering on top of the mesh. We can run only an STL. But we did use the SMI that way that if they will add this functionality, boom, we get it for free.
You mentioned something there called GlueShot.
Yeah.
You want to explain what GlueShot is?
Yes, I will maybe go first to explain that what my company wanted to focus on is basically building stuff on top of, extends the use case for service mesh. So service mesh is great because what it's doing, yes, this tree thing, which is great. But what I think more special about the service mesh is the way they fix, they implement that. And the way they're doing it is they basically detach the logic business application from actually the operation when they're putting it on the sidecar. By doing this, they abstract the network. And if they abstract the network, there's way more we can do. So we announced recently something called Service Mesh Hub. And this is something that you can just go there. It's really free. It's great. And what you can do is, it's basically based on Superglue and SMI. What it's doing is you can install whatever mesh you want, or either we can discover one that you already have. And then it's basically just very simple. You can manage that. But what's special about it is that it's basically bringing the experience of iPhone or Android to this experience of the mesh. We want to make it simple to use. So we should make it very simple to install, but also to extend. So what we created is kind of like an extension store. Right now it's free, so it's store, but yeah. Mm-hmm. But the ability to kind
it's
of
a catalog.
Like, yeah, exactly. That's the word I was thinking about. And basically what you can do is just basically click on this and extend. Now, because it's very knowledgeable about the meshes themselves, you know, discovery, you know, all of this, it can easily just be smart about it. For instance, if you want to install something like Flagger, which Flagger is basically a canary deployment by WeWork guys, we can, you need to know where Prometheus is. Now, you can go to Yaml and configure it, but if we already discover everything that you have in this mesh, we know which primitives you're using. And it's pretty simple for us to just basically pipe it for you. So it could be as simple as just extend your iPhone or extend your Android by download an app from the App Store. So that's the experience that we want to do. So it's free. Just go use it. The idea with this is that we want the community to build on top of it. We want the community to be able to put stuff on it without understanding Mesh. So we're creating an SDK that they will be able to leverage the quality of actually abstracting the network without actually need to understand how the mesh is working. So that's the second thing. And yeah, GlueShot is just the chaos engineering. So we have some interesting project, chaos engineering on top of mesh. It makes a lot of sense because if you think about it, today chaos engineering, you need to import a library. But then it's specific to a language and you also need to change your code.
All of the things that a service mesh frees you from.
Exactly. So what we said, what if we can basically fault injects and latency and on the proxy level, then you don't need to change anything. So we open source it. It's a Go project, very simple and very, very good, but leveraging basically based on the SMI right now only support STO because STO is the only one that supports fault injection. And the coolest one, in my opinion, that we're doing, it's called Loop. And what it's doing is it's solving the problem of recording bug in production and actually be able to replay that after it outside production with all the data and that was with it. So how does it work? It's actually working on it with the Lyft guys. What we're doing is that every time that we actually, you know, a request coming, we're saving all the data, basically recording all the data, header and body. And then in the end of the request, if everything good, we just tossing it. So we don't kind of like override the network. But if something is wrong anywhere, we're basically saving it. We're calling it loop. And then you can basically just add loops. And then you can do replay. And the replay is just basically going to spin up, inject all the information that's coming from the database to everything that you have in production. And you can attach debugger and just basically replay that.
That's really interesting. How far back does it go? So does it just take a look at a single like back and forth transaction or will it actually like have this sense of like, you know, in databases where you can hold lack an entire transaction if you need to do, you know, microservices architecture, you may be communicating with a dozen different services right. In order for one failure that's actually making it fail. Does it have the ability to think about the entire transaction throughout the system or just that one connection between server and
No, client? So we actually want the transaction, you know, because maybe you have a cascade error, right? I mean, so we wanted to get all of this. So basically it's all the transaction. I mean, this is one use case. Another use case that this is where Lyft needed. So Lyft is actually have their own system internally of support. And you know, if someone is actually going and say, hey, my Lyft is not here, they want to actually be able to click on the button and record everything that related to this user in this time. And then basically we can record everything and let the engineers to kind of like understand what's happening there. So I think it's pretty awesome. And it's solving the problem with open tracing because open tracing is basically, you know, it's the ability to have all the logs, but then it's a lot of data on the network. So what do? You samples, right? The biggest thing is samples. And you're only taking the header because it's too expensive. But do we really care about the one that's successful? No. So what if we only go and detect the one that fell, right? And then we can actually save all of it, give you all the information that you can. And because of the sidecar kind of like way with STO and all those measures, we can actually record also when it's going to the database, when it's going to S3, when it's going to everywhere. And then we can get basically a snapshot of all the things that you had in production where it's happening. So I think it's pretty cool.
Kubernetes has the challenge that it has to describe all the things that are possible in all of the API objects, but then it also has to be easy to access. And so there's been a lot of projects that exist to try and make it easier to describe all of these YAML files. Istio comes along in a very similar way and says, like, here are all of the things that we know you might need to customize them. On the whole, people only need to do one or two of them,
right. But
we need the things to be available. And so then you get platforms that build on top of them to make it easy. So Knative is a great example. You can come along and say, hey, I've just got some code or I've got a function and I'm container and I'm going to run that on the platform. You have integrated Glue into Knative. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So Knative is a great product and we're working very, very close with the Google guys. And, you know, we supported from the get-go any function because Glue is all about the migration. So we really care about serverless. What happened is that when Knative actually got out, there was kind of like, it was depending only on Istio. So you had to install Istio in order to actually use Knative. And the Google guys got a pushback basically from the community and say, why? Why do we need all those CRDs? When all we're trying basically using is two CRDs. Can we make it simple? And there, Google basically needed to evaluate if they can give an alternative. And they explore all those API gateway ingresses and they chose us, which is really cool for us. And we basically seamlessly integrated that. So basically today, the only official support right now from Knative is that you either can go with STO, which if you're already using it, it's make a lot of sense. But if only you use the case, the Kea native functionality and you're not interested in mesh, you should just lose Glue. And is it seriously one command line? GlueCTL install Knative. It's installing Knative with the Glue already baked inside, just working really seamlessly.
Are there cases where a function or a program running inside Knative needs to talk to something else as a backend where you need a full mesh between services rather than just the API gateway?
You don't be really, because all the point with Knative is that it's basically come from the outside. It's a function, right?
So if a function A wants to call function B, it goes all the way back out through the gateway and back in again.
Yeah, and therefore it's not a huge expense. The only thing that you are going to get better if you're using something like STO is, for instance, the telemetry. But that's something that we're going to fix really soon, because so Knative has three projects. Mm-hmm. So the serving is the one that we integrated with, but there is also the eventing. And the eventing specifically was a very hard dependency on STO. So basically, that's not something that we did, but now the Google guys are actually working to abstract it and we're helping them. And then basically we're going to, and they ask us to basically add Glue there. So we will add that. And then basically even that's all. So, you know, in the end of the day, it's Envoy.
What's next for Solo.io?
So we have quite a lot of projects coming up, but I will give you some example of something that we want to attack. So what is our job? Our job is to make service mesh easy to use. So let me give you an example of something that it's really hard today for user. Okay, so you install STO. That's not that hard. The problem is actually starting when you're trying to configure it. Now, that's something that you have to start from zero today. You're installing STO, you need to configure from scratch. The question is, do we really have to do that? I mean, think about what's happening with Docker. Today, when you're taking Docker container, do you start from zero? No, right? You're doing from Ubuntu or from a current...
You're copying and pasting from Stack Overflow.
Exactly. And how did they do it, right? They do it with layers, right? So what we did, and it's coming up very soon, is on this hub that we did, we're going to basically have an ability for basically sharing configuration of meshes, because we want community, right? We think we can go faster with community, want people to actually contribute that. And then basically what we did, we basically did an internal implementation that basically layers. So we use Customize plus Elm and basically layers the configuration for service mesh. And then you can say, well, everybody using MTLS. So why should I start it from the beginning? I can just take his implementation, then tweak it. And then you can actually start from 80% and just tweak it. So you can, in our app, you can install mesh, extend it, configure it, done. Which is pretty cool, right? So you can go much faster. So I think that's something that we should fix, and we're doing it, so it will become very soon. I think that another problem that have to be solved, and actually probably the problem that I heard the most when I was here, but actually we already started working on it, so it's good for us, is, you know, Google Build It, all your engineering are amazing. Like, those guys know how to write application and actually understanding mesh and configure it. That's not the scenario in a big organization. Usually they have operation and they have an app. And do I really want the app? Now, before that, it wasn't too hard, because kind of like, you know, whatever, the configuration of the retries, what it depends on was baked inside the application. But now service mesh solved it, right? It's actually took it out from the operation. Now it's going to the sidecar. So the question is, I'm as an application owner, really don't want to understand mesh. It's too complicated. How can I communicate right now to my actually operation to sell it to him what I need to be configured? And this interface is actually not defined yet. And that's what we're working on. And I think that the end result will be plugin for CI/CDs. That's where we believe that it will end. But that's what we're working on right now. And I think that will be useful.
Autotrader have built a delivery platform where their product people or their engineers basically say, here's my container and here are some lines of configuration. And some of that might be, this is what I want my retry policy to be. Some of them might be STO configuration. Some of them might be Kubernetes configuration. Do you think that there will be more platforms like that that are describing not just the way something's to be run, but the way the network is to be configured alongside it?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I have no doubt that that's what's going to happen. It makes sense, right? I mean, why should that treat different than anything else that you put in compute and storage, right? So it should be definitely together. And as I said, like with this tool that we built, which is this customized together with this, I think this is something that is so simple to do. So that's the direction we're going with.
What's the story with the logo?
Actually, it's nothing interesting. I needed a logo. We did this like 99 design competition. It was horrible. So I basically said, well, I need to go specifically after designer that I know that I like the logo. So I basically figure out who is the Docker designer because I really like the well. Mm-hmm. Reach out to him. He's somewhere in Indonesia. And I basically said to him, I need a logo. He did the owl and he did also glue. So everything, all our product is kind of like there is a line of, all of them look the same with this character. So it's all he's doing. Yeah, he's good. He's really good.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
You can find Idit on Twitter at Idit Levine. That's IDIT underscore LEVINE.
Thanks for listening. As always, if you enjoyed the show, please help us spread the word and tell a friend. If you have any feedback for us, you can find us on Twitter at KubernetesPod or reach us by email at KubernetesPodcast@google.com.
You can also leave your feedback in the form of a review from your favorite podcast client. Then go check out our website at kubernetespodcast.com, where you will find transcripts and show notes. Until next time, take care.
Catch you next week.